Chapter 6. 12 Angry Dwarves in Beaufort.
"I won't," Bella said stubbornly. "I absolutely will not."
"Come on now, be reasonable," Feely soothed.
"I am being quite reasonable," she said, crossing her arms over her chest. "I refuse to be carried like the baggage."
"But look how high up we are," Keely said, gesturing broadly.
"And it's hardly a gentle slope," added Balin.
"I'm fine," Bella protested. "I'll go slowly. It will..." "Stop! What are you doing?" she shouted, as Dwalin lifted her up by the collar and held her far enough over the edge to see just how distant the ground was.
"Ah," she said, paling. "Well, perhaps, if it will make the lot of you feel better..."
"It will,"
Thorne interrupted, glaring at Dwalin until he set Bella safely on her feet. "You'd better have Dora carry her," Nori offered, and Thorne inclined his head in agreement.
"What? No, I'm going to do it,"
Feely protested, pushing Bella a bit further back from the edge. Dori nodded at Thorne.
"Of course, I don't mind a bit."
"Why would Dori do it? I thought I would," Keely said, puzzled. "Or Feely, I suppose."
"Dory's very strong," supplied Ori. "He beat Mr. Dwalin at arm wrestling once."
Keely peered at Dori, then up at Dwalin, as did a few other members of the company, though none quite so blatantly.
"That cannot be true."
Dwalin scowled furiously, his hands curling into fists.
"He's strong enough,"
he muttered, and would say no more about it. So Bella found herself clinging to Dori. She had refused to be strapped to his back. There were limits. As the dwarves and Gandalf slowly climbed their way down the steep sides of the Carrack.
"Just a bit more, Miss Baggins," Dori called encouragingly. "You're doing very well."
"Dori, you are carrying me down a mountain," Bella yelled, exasperated. "Perhaps we might dispense with the formalities."
"Oh," said Dori, blushing. "Well, I would hardly call this a mountain, but certainly, if you like."
Dory's feet had barely touched the ground before Feely was pulling Bella from his back.
"Thank you, Dori,"
she said, standing on her toes to kiss his cheek. He patted her on the head.
"You're welcome, Bella."
A low grumble went through the company, and Feely tugged Bella over to where Keely was sitting, slumped against a rock.
"Look at you," she scolded, pushing his hair out of his eyes with gentle fingers. "You're exhausted."
"He's had a difficult night," Feely said, tipping Keely's chin up to peer at his face.
"You're hardly any better," Bella said, pushing down on his shoulder. "Sit before you fall over."
"Miss Baggins has the right of it, lads," Beaufort said, collapsing dramatically. "What say we have a bit of a rest?"
"No time for that,"
Thorne grumbled, but his heart wasn't in it.
"We've no supplies and no idea where we are."
"As to that," Gandalf said, "we are some miles north of where we ought to be, had we kept to the path through the mountains. As it happens, I may know of someone close by to help us."
"Close enough we might stop for some food," Bomber asked, hopeful. "I'm famished, and certainly Miss Baggins must be as well."
"Feely, why do they keep saying my name like that?" Bella asked quietly. He smirked.
"You told Dory he could use her given name. I believe they're trying to make a point."
"Oh," she colored. "Please do call me Bella," she called to the company at large. "All of you, I ought to have asked ages ago." The dwarves seemed pleased, but were too worn out for a proper cheer.
"If it pleases you, lass," Balin smiled. "But Bomber is right. We could all use a good meal."
"I can go hunting," Keely offered. "I'm not too tired for that."
"No,"
warned Gandalf.
"No hunting here. Do not even speak of it. Not in a skin changer's lands."
"What's a skin changer?" asked Bella.
"A person that changes his skin," said Gandalf, witheringly. "Often he is a man. Sometimes he roams the forest as a great bear. But he eats no flesh. The animals you see here he treats as his children. To harm them is to make a terrible enemy."
No more green food? Cried Ori.
If you are lucky enough to dine at this table, you'd be wise to eat what is put before you, Master Ori.
Gandalf thundered. Of course we will, Mr. Gandalf. Of course, Dory said, pulling Ori behind him by an arm.
I could still go and scout a bit, said Keeley. There may be fiddleheads or mushrooms or something.
It's the wrong season for fiddleheads, Bella said, poking him in the ribs.
If you don't know that, I'm not eating any mushrooms you bring back.
I'll go with him, said Feely, pulling Keeley to his feet. If that suits you, Uncle.
He waved them off, and they headed for a nearby stand of trees, tweaking Bella's hair as they left. She sat quietly as the dwarves around her rested and talked among themselves, until she noticed Thorin lowering himself gingerly to the ground.
Thorin, Bella asked, not liking how stiffly he moved. Are you well?
I'm fine, Miss Baggins,
he answered.
Your concern is unnecessary.
The others seem pleased enough to call me Bella, she teased, moving to stand beside him. Not you.
He scowled.
It was improper, their bullying you.
Thorin, she smiled, I would be happy for you to use my given name.
As you wish. Belladonna.
She made a face. Bella, she corrected. Belladonna was always my mother. How did you even know it?
From Gandalf. We needed it for the contract,
he said, then added, in a lighter tone,
I could call you Belle.
Oh, look who's bold now, she mocked, gasped. I don't know if Keeley would be best pleased by that.
And you?
He asked, all seriousness, but his bright eyes gave away his amusement.
Are you pleased?
Actually, she said, surprised, I think I'm starting to prefer Belle. Isn't that strange?
No, quite sensible. Belle is a good, sturdy name, nearly dwarfish.
Bella snorted. I'm a hobbit, not a dwarf. Don't let the braids fool you. Or the cloak.
Or the name,
Thorin said agreeably.
Or your kin.
She rolled her eyes. Is it possible your injuries have affected your mind? I think I preferred you surly.
You had your chance to be rid of me,
he said, and though his voice was mild, Bella sensed an unspoken question. Yes, well, she said, no one was going to kill you until I had your apology. Now that I have, it's between you and them.
Perhaps I ought to offend you again,
Thorin mused. She bit her cheek to keep from smiling. Perhaps.
Now,
Gandalf lectured as they paused beneath the shade of a high hedge at the border of their host's bee pastures.
We have reached the home of Beorn, who is a very great person. Be on your best behavior when I introduce you.
He looked pointedly at Thorin.
I will go and speak with him now, and Bella will go with me. In 5 minutes' time, two more of you will follow, then two more after that, and so on.
Why should we split up? For what purpose?
Thorin asked.
He is a solitary sort of fellow,
Gandalf said vaguely.
Better to introduce you a few at a time, or he may simply throw you all off his land and be done.
That will never work, said Balin.
Yes, it will, Bella murmured, not really loud enough to be heard. Either way, you're not taking Bella in there without us, Feely said, and Keeley nodded his agreement.
Now, now, I won't allow any great peril to befall her,
Gandalf said.
She will be quite safe.
He pointed at Thorin.
5 minutes, no sooner. Now come along, Bella.
They walked through a creaking wooden gate, then down a dirt path past what appeared to be a cow pasture, though it was full of horses and sheep as well, until they reached a large wooden house. Standing in the doorway was a huge man with a black beard large and bushy enough to impress even a dwarf. He was surrounded by hounds of all sizes, and he patted one on the head reassuringly. This must be Beorn, the skin changer, Bella thought. He scowled at Gandalf.
Who are you and what do you want?
I am Gandalf, he replied, and this is Bella Baggins.
he added, pushing her forward.
"We have lost our supplies and our way along the road, and are in rather desperate need of assistance."
The man's expression softened slightly when he saw Bella.
"These lands are no place for such a little thing,"
he said.
"Indeed,"
nodded Gandalf.
"We have already encountered the goblins and orcs on our journey." "Goblins,"
Beorn said, darkly.
"And you escaped?" "I killed the Goblin King, and the rest of us got away in the confusion,"
Gandalf said casually, as if this was the sort of thing he did most days. Beorn snorted.
"That sounds quite a tale."
He frowned.
"But what do you mean, the rest of you? I count only two. Did you lose some?" "Ah, there may be one or two more. Oh, look, here comes one now. Prompt as ever, I see, Master Oakenshield."
Gandalf glared at Thorin, who was moving briskly down the track.
"You said to wait 5 minutes, Gandalf."
Thorin smirked at him, a bit winded.
"You didn't specify that I must walk."
He turned to Beorn and bowed, as if to show Gandalf he had manners enough when required.
"Thorin Oakenshield, at your service." "I have no need of your service,"
Beorn said gruffly. Thorin frowned at his rudeness, and things probably would have gone very poorly had Bella's stomach not chosen that moment to gurgle embarrassingly. "Oh." She blushed, covering her mouth with her hand. "Please excuse me." It broke the tension, and Beorn laughed.
"Come in, then, the lot of you. I would hear your tale, though I doubt I will believe it, and we had better get this little bunny something to eat."
And he leaned over and lifted Bella off the ground, settling her on his shoulder. As he carried her into the house, Bella tried very hard to ignore the sound of a scuffle behind her, and the thump that sounded suspiciously like someone being hit with a wizard's staff. He did not set her down as they sat around his table, but he did hand her a thick slice of bread, dripping with butter and honey, so she did not feel too inclined to complain when he shifted her into his lap. Thorin sat on the other side of Gandalf, away from Beorn, his face a careful mask of neutrality. He did not look at either Bella or their host as Gandalf began the story of their trek through the Goblin Kingdom.
"What is this?"
asked a dark voice from the doorway. Turning, Bella was shocked to see that it was Keeley, striding into the room, his hand on the hilt of his sword. She shook her head frantically, and he paused mid-step, eyes narrowing.
"Indeed, brother,"
Feely added, appearing at her side as if he were the one with the ring of invisibility. His voice was too soft, and Bella did not like the way he was staring appraisingly at Beorn.
"Feely! Keeley!"
she said, with as much cheer as she could. "I'm so glad you're here. Gandalf was just telling our host about our trip through the mountains." She turned to Thorin, thinking he might restrain his nephews, but he only raised a brow at her, seemingly content to let matters unfold as they would. "Bella, are you well?" Feely asked, still watching Beorn, who looked amused.
"Quite well," she said sharply. "Do sit down and let Gandalf finish his tale."
Feely nodded, and he and Keeley went to sit on either side of Thorin, crossing their arms and making no move toward the food.
"You must be hungry,"
she said to them through gritted teeth.
"Why not eat a little?"
Glaring at Gandalf as if he had betrayed them, Feely reached for a slice of bread.
"Go on, then,"
said Beorn, smiling at last,
"before this little bunny eats it all."
And then, smirking right at the dwarves, he reached over and poked Bella lightly in the stomach. The bread crumbled in Feely's fist, and Thorin and Keeley were identical expressions of dark fury.
"Ha-ha!"
Bella said, brightly, blessing her mother for every etiquette lesson she'd ever been given. "Mr. Beorn, you are quite the wit! Now, Gandalf, you were saying?"
"What is this?"
thundered Dwalin from the doorway, and Bella covered her face with her hands. Though he claimed not to believe a word of their story, Beorn was impressed enough with the tale, and amused enough by the dwarves' irritation over his treatment of Bella, that he offered them shelter for the night. Thorin, looking mutinous, seemed inclined to refuse, so Gandalf had accepted for all of them. Dinner was a tense affair. The food was excellent, and though there was no meat, there was bread and honey and butter and jam and cheese in such abundance that even Dwalin did not complain, and greens too, although only Bella and Beaver seemed to enjoy them. Beorn relinquished her to a chair at last, and Bella had hoped that would be the end of the matter, but the seat he chose for her was next to him at the head of the table, and to say the dwarves did not approve would be a grave understatement. Gandalf sat on Beorn's other side, looking untroubled and occasionally silencing one of the angrier dwarves with a sharp kick. Aside from screaming the first time her cup was refilled by a sheep, Bella spent the meal wavering between trying to ease the stiff, grumbling conversation and staring daggers at all the dwarves, who did not notice, being too busy themselves staring daggers at Beorn. Their host, on the other hand, was very merry indeed, trading stories with Gandalf, petting his animals as they cleared the dishes, and tormenting the dwarves with his solicitousness towards Bella, taking it upon himself to refill her cup once it was clear the sheep unnerved her. He took his leave of them after supper, which Bella considered a small mercy. Gandalf vanished as well, which was probably a matter of self-preservation, as all the dwarves, particularly Feely, had been eyeing him with a general ill will. Both Gandalf and Beorn had warned them, very seriously, not to leave the house after dark, no matter what noises they might hear. The door had no sooner shut behind Beorn than the dwarves were upon her, muttering dire warnings and leading her toward the enormous fire where they had all made themselves comfortable. Feely dropped down before it, pulling her to sit in front of him, and started unraveling the snarls in her hair with a gentleness that was at odds with his dark tone. "In the morning, Keely will go out to check for rabbit hutches. If he finds any that fit you, we are leaving." "You cannot be serious," Bella said. "Beorn has been a gracious host. I could do without all the lifting and carrying about, but it's a small price to pay for food and a night or two of safety." "Who knows what he intends?" Feely scowled. "Perhaps he thinks to add you to his menagerie." "I am not an animal, Feely," Bella said, irritated, and Keely put a soothing hand on her arm. "He thinks of them as his children. Gandalf said so," Feely replied. "And he seems quite taken with you. Who knows the price he might demand for his hospitality?"
"It's lucky we only brought one hobbit," Dwalin grumbled from his chair opposite them. "Or he might try for a breeding pair." "Watch your tongue," Thorin growled, slamming a fist against a small table. "Feely is right. If anything seems amiss in the morning, we go. If he tries to prevent us, any of us, we fight him, though I prefer it not come to that."
"He was trying to rile you," Bella pointed out, "and he would have stopped if it had not worked so well." "Maybe that's what he wants you to think," suggested Keely, which Bella thought was mad, until she saw that Thorin was nodding in agreement, and then she gave up hope for any sensible conversation.
"At least she is armed," said Glowin. "It's a lucky thing you didn't lose your sword under the mountains, lass."
"Yes," Bella agreed. "I lost my pack, though. Luckily I wasn't carrying much, just some spare clothes and—" "Oh!" she cried, patting at her pockets. "Oh, no, I've lost it."
"What have you lost?" Ori asked, looking around him as if she might have just dropped whatever it was.
"My knife," Bella replied, aghast. "My father's knife. I had no pockets in Rivendell, so I put it in my pack, and my pack is now beneath a mountain." She wrung her hands. "I've lost my knife, and my bells, too."
She lowered her head, trying to cover her eyes. "Of all the things to cry about," she scolded herself, "the loss of a few trinkets is hardly the end of the world." But she thought of the little blade her father had kept so carefully, lost and lonely in the dark, and she could not stop the tears. And her bells! She was ashamed to have lost Feely and Keely's gift so soon. "I can't help you with your knife, Belle," Keely said. "But you haven't lost these." And he pulled the little silver bells from a pocket in his cloak.
"Oh!" Belle gasped, leaning over to wrap her arms around his shoulders. "Your magic! How did you do it?"
Keely grinned.
"Dwalin handed them to me when he took them out of your hair. I was going to put them in your pack, but—"
He shrugged.
"I was happy, and they reminded me, so I thought I'd hold on to them for a bit. I would have braided them back in later.
he said earnestly, as if afraid she might take offense. "Keely, tonight you are my hero." She smiled at him. "Will you put them in now?" It was the right thing to say, because Keely beamed and slid over by Feely, who was still struggling with her knots. "I'm sorry about your knife, Bella," Feely said. "We'll replace it in Erebor. It won't be your father's, but my uncle tells me there are such blades as will never dull."
"It seems excessive for a pocket knife," Bella said wryly, and Keely laughed.
"You'll need a comb as well," he said, tugging lightly on one of her curls. "That would make this much easier."
"Perhaps you'll receive one for a courting gift," Balin suggested. "It would be very traditional."
Bella frowned. "That isn't very kind," she said, stung. "What do you mean?" Keely asked. "Do hobbits not give courting gifts? Or combs?"
"We do," Bella said. "The men give flowers to show their intentions, and the women food. But Balin is teasing me." "I was not," said Balin. "You'll be quite a wealthy hobbit if we take Erebor, with a connection to nobility besides. You're sure to have at least a few suitors. I imagine your brother will be your intermediary."
"Accept nothing she would not like, no matter how great its value," Glóin advised Feely, "and refuse anything cheap or poorly made."
"I have no idea what any of you are saying," Bella said, feeling a bit lost. "Why would Feely accept gifts intended for me? Not that I expect to see any, and certainly not that I would accept anyone who is after me for my money."
"Technically, Keely could also accept courting gifts on your behalf," Feely explained, shooting his brother a look. "But he won't, because anyone who would go around your eldest relative is trying to get away with something."
"I think you had better speak more plainly," Bella said. "Courting gifts."
"Ah," said Balin. "I see. When a dwarf wishes to pay court, he chooses a gift for his intended. Combs are traditional, as are knives, but it may be anything. They are given through a family member, usually a father or uncle, and if he finds the gift acceptable, he will pass it along. If she thinks it praiseworthy, courtship commences. If she accepts it without favor, he is invited to try again. And if she refuses it, she rejects him."
"And only your men do this?" Bella asked, curious, in spite of her discomfort with the subject.
"No, a woman may give a courting gift," Balin said thoughtfully.
"But they rarely get the chance," said Dori. "There being so few of them, many receive offers as soon as they come of age."
"Bomber got one,"
Beaufort said, poking his brother in the side,
"on account of his magnificent beard."
"Did he accept it?" Bella inquired. "Or is it rude to ask?"
"Not rude at all. These things are generally quite public," Balin said.
"I did."
Bomber blushed.
"A set of iron cookware. Lost my heart that day."
He sighed.
"I pity whoever tries to get a gift past Feely," Keely grinned. "I wouldn't have the nerve for it. He's got too good an eye."
"Don't worry, Bella," Feely said, undoing a particularly bad bit of braid Keely was stuck on. "I'll let a few by, if they're good enough. Only the best, though."
"No," Bella said firmly. "No gifts. No courting. I want no part of it."
"Of course not, if you don't wish it," Balin said. "No one would force you. But are you so set on it?"
"Completely," Bella said. "No suitors."
"But why?" Keely asked. "You're not planning to leave us, are you?"
"What do you mean?" Bella said.
"After the quest," Keely repeated, frowning. "Do you plan to return to your shire?"
"I had not thought about what I would do afterwards," Bella said, "though I doubt I'll return to Bag End. Are there any cities near the mountain where I might take up residence? I'd miss you terribly if I had to go far."
"What?" cried Feely. "You wouldn't stay with us in Erebor?"
"Well, how can I? I'm no dwarf, no matter how many braids you put in my hair."
"Oh, that doesn't matter," Feely said, relaxing. "We'll find you a room with ours, and you needn't accept any suitors if you don't wish it. Many dwarves don't."
"Though I do wonder why you wouldn't," said Keely. "It's a long story, and not a very good one, I'm afraid." Bella said, trying to sound dismissive.
Tell us, Keely insisted, and all the other dwarves looked interested as well, and Bella realized she could not escape.
I was nearly engaged once, she sighed, many years ago, just before my coming of age.
The room exploded into speculation. Engaged? What happened to him? Did he die? Before you came of age?
Only Thorin stayed silent, staring into the fire with an inscrutable expression. Nearly engaged, Bella corrected. Of course, it could not be official until my birthday, but everyone knew there was an understanding, and it was expected that we would announce our intentions at my birthday party, which we had intended to do. She paused, and the dwarves were quiet as they waited for her to continue. It wasn't the best match for me. He was a bit older than I was, and his family was lower in station, but I didn't care. My mother had a new dress made for the occasion, the blue one you saw, and we spent weeks party planning. But then, a few nights before our announcement, he was overheard. Bella took a deep breath. It hurt to continue, but no more than the twinge of a wound long healed. He was heard in a tavern, telling people that he would soon be quite a rich hobbit, but that he would be working hard to earn such a comfortable living. He meant being married to me, of course. He was a fool to say something like that anywhere in Hobbiton. It got back to my father immediately, though I did not believe him when he told me. She sighed. I was so certain he was wrong, and my father proposed a test. So I told him that my parents had changed their minds about the match, and threatened me with disinheritance. I told him that I did not care, and would be happy to live with him any place, and that was the truth. But I saw on his face how he really felt, when he thought there would be no money. He broke it off right away. He was kind about it. She smiled. Too kind, really. I would have preferred to shout, I think.
Do you love him still? Ori interrupted. Is that why you will accept no other?
Oh, no, Bella said, almost laughing at the thought. No, no, I care nothing for him now. But I was terribly hurt at the time, and so embarrassed. I made my mother cancel the party. It was quite a scandal.
You're well rid of him, Beaufort said. It was a lucky escape.
You're right, Bella agreed. But it quite put me off of courting. There were a few offers after that, but I had no heart for it.
Well, you needn't worry about it any longer, Feely assured her. You'll stay with us in Erebor, and court whoever you please, or no one, as it suits you.
If I am welcome, Bella said firmly. So I suppose we'll see.
It is my mountain. Surely it falls to me to decide who is welcome.
Thorin said, speaking for the first time since the conversation had turned to courting.
There you are, see? Said Keely.
Bella smiled at his enthusiasm. That wasn't an invitation, Keely.
It was,
Thorin said mildly. Oh, Bella blushed to the tips of her ears. My thanks, then. He waved them away.
It is a large mountain. We can spare you a room.
He stood up.
Get some rest, all of you. We may have to leave at first light.
Feely and Keely got to their feet. Are you coming, Bao? Keely asked. She shook her head. I'll sit here for a bit, if you don't mind. You go on, though. The others paused.
I prefer, Thorin said carefully, that you not be without protection.
She looked up at him, surprised. Surely it's safe enough. I will not leave the house.
It is not what roams out there that I worry about.
Thorin frowned.
Who knows when our host may return?
Not this again, she sighed. I'll sit up with her, Beaufort offered, holding up a bit of wood he was carving. I'm not quite ready to turn in myself. Everyone found that agreeable, and in just a few minutes, it was only Bella, Beaufort, and Beaufort left by the fire. They sat in companionable silence for a while, with Beaufort making his gestures at Beaufort, and Bella trying to puzzle them out. She determined that a downward slashing motion meant knife, as Beaufort handed one over every time he saw it. The more emphatic the motion, the bigger the blade. "You must be looking forward to it," she said, when her eyes grew too tired to follow their silent conversation. "Seeing your home again, I mean."
"Us? Nah, we're Blue Mountain dwarves, born and bred," Beaufort said, making a rough back-and-forth gesture toward Beaufort, who handed him a scrap of sandpaper. "Never been to Erebor."
"Oh," said Bella, "I hadn't realized." A few minutes passed, with no sound other than the rough hiss of Beaufort's work.
"May I ask you a question?" Bella said, suddenly.
"Of course." Beaufort glanced up, surprised. She hesitated. "You might consider it impertinent." He looked at her solemnly.
"We'll have to risk it, then."
"Well, I'd like to know. When you said you weren't from Erebor, it made me curious. The others are all related to Thorin in some way, Keeley told me, and they have a stake in reclaiming their homeland, besides. But you seem to have no ties, either to the mountain or to Thorin. So what would make you join in on this mad quest?"
"Ah," Beaufort said, leaning back against a chair. "I can see why you'd be wondering. It's a bit of a tale. You want the whole of it?"
At Bella's nod, he continued.
"You've heard of the Battle of Azanulbazar, where Thror was lost. Balin told you of it, I think. Well, my brother and I grew up in the Blue Mountains, true enough, but our line hails from Moria. We'll always think of that as our true home."
He frowned at his work and made an adjustment with his smallest knife.
"When the call came for strong lads to take back Khazad Dûm, Moria, as you know it, Bomber and I joined up right away. Both of us were a bit young for it, but we'd grown up hearing about the splendor of Moria's halls and her wondrous mines, rich in mithril. So we were keen to have a look at the place, as you can imagine."
He paused, looking at Beaufort, who reached over to pat his knee.
"It was horrible. Not much training in combat, Bomber and me. Beaufort either, but he was a bit older and a sight burlier from work in the mines, so he came along to keep an eye on us.
He..." Beaufort paused, looking down at his hands. "He was injured, as you've seen. Many were, too many to count, and more than that were dead already. But we dragged him to the healer's tent after the battle, because he still breathed and we were young and very foolish."
Bella watched Beaufort, who was humming softly to himself as he carved, and a chill ran through her.
Beaufort went on. "The healers took one look at him and wouldn't even let us cross the threshold. Hopeless, they said, and they had the right of it, to be honest. You couldn't even see his face for the blood. We pitched a fit, of course, and they called for the guards. But who should storm out of the tent but Thorin Oakenshield, hero of the hour?"
He paused, as if he were seeing it all again in his memory.
"He looked at Beaufort the way he does, you know it, like he can see all the way through you. And then he looked at us, and he asked, 'Your brother?' 'Close enough,' I said, and he nodded and turned to the healer, and I'll never forget what happened then, not till I rest in the Maker's halls. He said, 'Put him in with the nobles. Do all you can, and spare nothing. Enough of us have lost our brothers today.'"
"What?" Bella asked. "Did he..."
"Aye," Beaufort nodded. "Prince Freyrin, cut down almost at the start of it."
"Oh." Bella felt her eyes sting with sympathy. "But Beaufort was saved, at least."
Beaufort smiled at her. "He was. So you see, we're king's men, the three of us, right to the end."
He winked at her.
"And besides, it told me when I signed on that the ale was free."
He blew the dust off his project and tossed it to her. She fumbled it a bit, but didn't drop it.
"Here you are, then," he said, and when she looked down, she realized he was holding a wooden comb. "Alone, so no worries. Not trying anything. Keep it as long as you like."
"Thank you, Beaufort," she said,
her voice thick. You're very kind.
It's nothing.
He smiled. You're one of us now, as I've said before. Ready to sleep? She nodded.
Good. I daren't go up without you, no matter how kind you think our host. I'd rather face the dragon than the others, if something were to happen.
Ridiculous, all of you. Bella said, terribly fond. It was even worse the next day. Beorn was in high spirits, having confirmed their story on his mysterious errand the night before, and without Gandalf to threaten the dwarves into civility, things very nearly came to blows.
"Where's our little bunny?"
Beorn's voice rang through the rafters.
"I've a mind to show her the gardens."
"Quickly, brother," Feely whispered, shoving Bella toward Keely. "I'll distract him. You get her out the door before he sees."
"But I'd like to see the garden," Bella protested. "I hardly got a look yesterday, and there were so many flowers."
"I'll show you," Keely promised. "We'll look at all the weeds you want, right now, outside."
"He's coming,"
hissed Dory from the stairway. Feely looked around frantically. The loft where they'd slept had no other exits, not even a window.
"If you try to cover me with a blanket, Feely, I swear I'll ask him to show me the entirety of the grounds."
Bella narrowed her eyes.
"Excuse me, Master Beorn,"
they heard Thorin call from below.
"What can you tell me of the state of the mountains?" "Much,"
Beorn answered, less exuberantly.
"If I was of a mind to. I'm concerned Gandalf left a few things out of his account regarding the goblin forces."
Thorin lied smoothly.
"We saw far more of their city than he did, in any case. It may be useful to share information." "I suppose,"
Beorn said, and their voices faded as they moved away from the stairs.
"Go, now!" Feely shoved at Keely. "Keep outside until you hear my signal."
"Or until lunchtime," Bella said firmly. "Certainly no later than that."
"Fine, but don't blame us if you end up in a rabbit hutch," Keely complained. "You're no help at all!"